Welcome aboard the SSI Iridium Explorer. Our mission is to boldly go where hackers, where few hackers have been before. We go into depth of the Iridium satellites. We go and explore additional satellite and space communication. I had a quick look about these two nice gentlemen, and it's surprisingly they have over a dozen talks in the media.ccc.de, so I think they're pretty experienced in what they're doing. They do all the badges I learned also earlier. Please welcome on stage Zach and Schneider for a talk, Investigation on Iridium Satellite.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Now? No?
Nice. I can talk. Handmikro.
There you go.
Okay, then we do it like that. All right. This is Zach. I'm Schneider. We have been on stage here a few times, and somehow we managed to do SAAL 1 again. I'm not exactly sure how. But let's talk about Iridium again. It has been a few years since we talked at the CCC event about Iridium, and I'm not sure if everyone knows who is in the room right now what Iridium is, but you have a nice little animation on screen right now, which is a schematic view of the Iridium system. It's 66 satellites. They are in low Earth orbit, so a little bit lower than other satellites, let's say TV satellites or stuff like that. And as they are a little bit lower, they only see parts of the globe at a time, so you need some more. But that also has some advantages, because you can have smaller devices and lower latency. So let's say Starlink is a next generation and a more evolved system like that, but Iridium still has some tricks up its sleeve, and we have been investigating it now for more than 10 years, I think. So it consists of 66 satellites, which are in low Earth orbit. You can have messaging services, you can have voice, you can have data, you can have machine-to-machine communication, and some new services that Iridium is pushing right now, for example, itself as a GPS alternative or as a system to broadcast data, binary data, all across the globe for whatever reason someone might want to do that. There's a lot of applications for it. You have trackers, which track logistic stuff. You have buoys, which are in the ocean, which look at where fish swarms are, stuff like that. You have a lot of aircraft systems which use this. You have covert operations. That's actually how we got into this first place, because there are pagers which only receive but never send, and we thought, hey, who would like use something which works on a global scale? And that got us into this some years ago. And I'm now going to bore you with some technical details and some nitpicks, and later on, Zach is going to entertain you with some interesting things that we have seen on the Iridium satellite network during the last few years. So when we started, we thought, okay, let's just stick a piece of wire into a cable, and then we have an Iridium antenna, but that really didn't work that well. And we had to learn that the hard way, and then we invested a lot of money into goals of blocks and blocks of gold and off-the-shelf Iridium antennas, and that somehow worked. I'm not sure. Does anyone here know Friis equation or Friis formula? Any ham radio people here? Yeah? A few. Okay. Well, the thing is that it gets much better if you have an antenna which has the amplifier right at the element of the antenna, with no connectors, no cables or anything like that. So last time we talked here, we said, okay, let's modify GPS antennas. Let's remove filters. Let's have extra modifications, add new filters, add the different patch antenna and stuff like that. But that's all, like, you have to find the right GPS antenna and you have to do it yourself, and I don't think a lot of people did that. But thankfully, well, capitalism to the rescue, apparently we created a market for Iridium antennas. And the RTL SDR block published has on sale an antenna which is specifically also made to receive Iridium signals. So yay, capitalism, right? Cool. It does all the right things. It has the active element right there. Then on the backside, it has some amplification systems like a low noise amplifier, a nice filter, and another amplifier. And I thought, okay, hello, let's try and buy this thing. And when I turned it on at home, okay, hey, wait, our software doesn't really somehow like the signals which are coming out of here, and there's some noise in the band which I did not expect there at all, and other antennas did not see that. Well, so maybe, I'm not sure, capitalism not to the rescue. Turns out, well, if you have an amplifier directly at the antenna, you better have a good one there, because if you have strong mobile stations, let's say in a city next to you, it will just radiate into this antenna, oversteer the amplifier, and then you have some noise in your iridium band, which your software doesn't deal with very well. So, okay, it kind of was back to, let's build this ourselves. If anyone's interested in, there's a project on GitHub for an active L-band antenna that is based on a design that TNT from the Osmo DevCom,
Osmocom
people did, and it's a very nice antenna. I tested it against other antennas, and it's cool. It performs very well, better than what I can get commercially. But still, you have to build it yourself. And for a moment, we thought about, okay, maybe we should actually sell this thing so people can use our toolchain nicely. But, you know, selling hardware is a completely different business, and we're not really in that. Although it's very nice, you can put it into a housing, you can make it weatherproof, it has lots of different options to add connectors and make it a nice antenna. Well, actually Iridium came to our rescue by creating a new service called Iridium Time and Location. As many people probably know, GPS is a system which by now is heavily attacked in certain places, jammed, or even with wrong position data being sent. And Iridium realized, okay, there's a market here to position themselves as an alternative to GPS, or at least augment GPS with a signal which is at least, let's say, authenticated and stronger than GPS, and they call it Iridium Time and Location. And the nice thing about it is that it's another service which is receive only. You don't need an antenna which sends. And that was always the problem with commercial Iridium antennas, because they're for phones, and phones also send, so they have electronics inside which switch around, and they're not really meant for, like, let's say, reception of really low-level signals in difficult circumstances, where you, let's say, have a satellite somewhere at the horizon that you're not actually talking to, you still want to listen to it. And there are now commercial manufacturers of Iridium antennas, which are completely active, receive-only antennas, and specifically the HC610. It's a really nice antenna, so if you want to get into Iridium, just buy that one. You can mount it on a pole, let's say somewhere in a city close to you, and have some nice reception. The only thing I would recommend, get an SMA bulkhead adapter, because then you can attach actual cables to it. Here's a size comparison of these different antennas. And now you could think, okay, hey, let's build a system like this. Raspberry Pi, small SDR, BIOS-T, and an antenna. And because I thought, hey, that's cool. I mean, I can walk around with this and have some nice reception. But the problem is, and I just want to tell you that, if you have a USB-3 capable SDR, it will just radiate into your antenna. So please don't do that. You will have lots of noise. What you want is you want to have your antenna a few meters away. So how does this look at our setup in Munich? That's where we conduct the most research on Iridium. We have this antenna on a small boom here, which is far away from other stuff. It has nice view of the sky, and it's connected to a small rack that we share with the ham radio people at Munich CCC, where we have our reception setup. Now, that's all about hardware. Let's talk a little bit about software. Last time we presented, we had our toolchain state here, which is you have the SDR, you do some signal processing on it, and in the end, a file is output with data from the Iridium signal, from the Iridium system. Back then, we could like decode live around 20% of all the data that Iridium was sending down. mainly because one of, first of all, it's made, written in Python. Python is, with NumPy, quite performant, but not as performant as we might wanted to have it. And also, we were pushing a lot of data into this queue and then trying to do math on it. So now we have GR Iridium, and what's the difference with GR Iridium? First of all, it's implemented in GNU Radio. GNU Radio is written in C++. We have much better performance there. We have way more input options. You can have Osmo SDR, you can have SOAPI, you can have file sources, you can stream via internet into this thing. So let's say you can have your SDR somewhere on the roof and an Ethernet connection to a more beefy PC somewhere in your cellar and stream into it. And then also, quite some time after it was actually held, I found a talk at the Gulasch Programmiernacht about a FFT-based channelizer, and that performed way better than other stuff that we had so far found in GNU Radio. And the nice thing about it is that this finally allowed us to run this whole software on a Raspberry Pi. So back then, the Raspberry Pi 4 was just about being capable to, let's say, decode most of the band, and it was just using like half a CPU core for this very specific component, which otherwise was not able to run on a single CPU core. And now, talking about Raspberry Pi, if you want to build a setup, I suggest go for an Intel N100 device and not for a Raspberry Pi. You'll actually spend less money on an N100 with the SSD inside, with a power supply already included and a nice case to it. I would only go for Raspberry Pis if you actually have one lying around. None of these two are open source anyway, so I'm not sure it matters a lot. Now, we wanted to have some live demos, and we had some brave people setting up an antenna on a roof close to you. And there you can see the N100 and the USB B200. And last time I checked, like 10 minutes ago, I did not have any connection to this machine anymore. So let's see, maybe at the end of the talk we'll have some demos, maybe not. Now, let's talk a little bit about actual Iridium signals. Here's a view of how Iridium looks in a spectrum. From left to right, there's time, and from bottom to top, there's frequency, and like the green and red blocks are signals from Iridium. Iridium has a structure of around every 90 milliseconds, everything repeats. And inside these 90 milliseconds, there's some specific structure, how the signals are oriented. And first of all, up there, we have the simplex channel that's downlink only. Sometimes the satellites send their own position inside the simplex part of the spectrum. Sometimes they send down where they think they are sending to on Earth. Then come the uplink parts. This is where the mobile devices send up to the satellite, and the satellite then receives their signal. And then later on, we have the downlinks, where the satellite then talks down to the mobile devices and supplies them with the data they wanted. Now, you might spot a little interesting thing about this, and that is that the uplinks actually are at the same time as the downlink-only part, right? And it's a bit weird. The thing is that when a mobile device sends something from Earth to the satellite, it has to send a little bit earlier than where the satellite needs to receive it. So these, I think, around 8 to 10 or 8 to 12 milliseconds before the signals reach the satellite, it actually, the mobile device already has to send it. And here comes something interesting. So that means that when a mobile device sends something, depends on its location relative to the satellite. And in addition, also, the mobile device also corrects for the Doppler shift, because the satellite is maybe coming towards it, or maybe it's going away from the mobile device. So just by sending the signal, the mobile device is already emitting certain information about itself. And we were always interested in what kind of metadata can we get from just pure data without actually decoding it. And the frequency we could always estimate pretty well, but for the specific time, when was something sent and when did we receive it, we weren't so good a few years ago. And we spent significant amount of time to try and rectify that. So we got ourselves a GPS-disciplined oscillator, which sends a pulse into our SDR every exactly once a second. And this pulse is aligned with when the international standard bodies say a second happens. And then we tried to correlate, okay, when does our SDR tell us that a signal arrives, and how does this relate to the time that Iridium satellites tell us it is at the moment? And when we tried that, we were within like 30 microseconds, and we're wondering, okay, do we have like a 10 kilometer antenna cable inside, or is the Iridium time really that bad? And, well, to understand what's going on here, you have to see that, well, the downlink is maybe sometime later in time, but the time inside these packets actually relates to the beginning of this 90 millisecond slot. So when you receive the time in a packet via Iridium, you actually have to calculate back, okay, like how many milliseconds into this 90 millisecond slot is this? And for that, you need to know the frame structure. And if you look up the internet, you find lots of diagrams how the Iridium frame structure is supposedly built up, and you find specific numbers in there, but it didn't just kind of match up. And then at some point, we did a Google image search, and there was a document, and this thing was in the preview of the document, and it had like a slightly different timing in there. And we clicked the document. This picture is not inside the document. It's just not in there. But it resolves most of the issues, and now we're down to, okay, around 9 microseconds, but still, do we have like 300 meters of coax cable somewhere in here? Probably not. I thought, okay, maybe the position that the satellites are sending down is not quite okay. And, well, the U.S. government tracks satellites for you. You can just download the data and you say, okay, where's the specific satellite? And you plug that number into their database and tell you, yeah, the satellite is right there at the moment. And if you do this, well, the peak gets smaller and we see, okay, we're actually quite accurate. We are time-stamping signals within, let's say, 2 microseconds. But still, there's a lot of offset, and I spent a lot of time. And in the end, it turned out, well, the SDR that we're using has some, not random, but specific delay from when it receives this 1 second pulse to, and correlates that to a signal received on its antenna port, simply not documented. That we had to like build a whole measurement setup and then tell them, hey, like, can you please at least document this? And I think they still haven't done that. And that's really frustrating. So now we're down to like 4 microseconds. Okay, that's better. That's a kilometer actually in free space. Better than nothing. And now the question is always like, can we use this as a GPS alternative? And we wanted to show a demo. Not sure if this is going to happen, but we can actually locate a receiver, like if you are a receiver within, let's say, 400 meters, if things are going well. But that also means, like, anyone, if you're listening to Iridium and you're publishing data collected via a toolkit on the internet, assume that you can be located within a few hundred meters, so be careful about that, independent of if things are illegal or not. Then, so that was our excursion into timestamping stuff. We also had a look at, okay, so Iridium is evolving. There's something called Iridium Next. It's the next generation of Iridium. They have new modulation formats, probably different kinds of encryption on there. If block one, like the original Iridium, had no encryption at all unless the users do it. We have obtained a firmware and some debug prints, so if anyone wants to investigate that stuff, maybe hit us up. Most interesting thing is that we got some naming for different modulation schemes and also the forward error correction codes, like 4/5 and 2/3 for these different ones, and to evolve our tool chain a little bit also, and together with some FCC documentation about roll-off factors, we're actually now able, via Iridium, to decode like the first piece of Iridium Next, and that's this one channel wide thingy at 30 kilobits per second. So if anyone is interested in Next, check out, it's a specific branch, but I think we're going to merge it soon into the main branch, where you can actually decode like your first Iridium Next signals and see what you can see. There's some structure in it. It's certainly not just random noise fully encrypted. Maybe it's some data that the network itself is using for management, because probably the data frames they're a little bit larger and use more channels. But already this specific type of frame there makes, I think, 10 to 20% of all frames that we are receiving at the moment. And now with this rather boring stuff, let's talk to Zach about some data.
Okay. Ich hab, so, thank you. So all the code that detects and demodulates the next frames is written by Schneider in, like, I think a week ago or two. Just when we should be like preparing the talk, he was, oh, let's do that instead. we have not looked into the data that's in there very much. Okay, so I will tell you a little bit about the data that's going down on the from Iridium. So our toolchain, the GR Iridium, outputs the detected bursts. We tag the Iridium next packets with the new modulation NC1, so the rest of the code knows whether there was an Iridium next or normal signal, and then they get sorted into the correct frames, whether it's an Iridium, an old Iridium signal. They have a different unique word than the next signals. Interestingly enough, they are, of course, they're different from the old stuff, but the downlink unique word of next is kind of similar to the uplink unique word from the old Iridium and vice versa, which means that before our changes, our toolchain misidentified some next frames, but that's fixed now. So and these frames, we have support for, in this case, it's in Spectrum, to export all the received frames with tags. So if you look at the recording, you can for debugging and visualization, identify all the frames. The orange line is not part of the thing. That's the separation between the simplex and the duplex. I mean, Schneider talked about the time slot structure, but all the simplex frames are also like frequency-wise separate from the rest. They're at higher frequencies. And the line is not very exact because of the Doppler shift of the satellites. Due to Doppler shift, the frequency that you receive stuff at differs from what it was sent at. And interestingly enough, a Iridium signal is like 31.5 kilohertz wide approximately, and then there's a 5 kilohertz guard band to the next Iridium band, but you can see the Doppler shift is larger than that. So you kind of have to either know where the satellite was when you received it to correct for it, or you have to kind of guess which band the signal was meant for. I mean, our toolchain usually just ignores the band, because if you look at the packet hard enough, you will find out what it is, regardless of at which frequency it was. And I will now quickly go through all the different packets that we know of, that we found. In the simplex band, so in the broadcast downlink broadcast only thing, we have four major packets, which is one, the time and location signal. Schneider talked about it for a slight bit. And the ring alert, the INP, the new packet, and the messaging packets. Let's start with the pager messages. This is what we had in the talk in 2014 already decoded, so I will skip quickly over it. It's like old school pagers, so it's like downlink only. You have a dumb pager in your pocket, and the satellite sends a message. The satellite doesn't know where you are. You tell the network beforehand, like, I'm in this country or whatever, and that's where it gets sent down. And if your pager is not on, or you're too far inside a building and you don't receive it, the message is gone and you won't see it. We have examples here that I picked from like this year. Like, it's not used very much anymore. Like, you can't, like, pagers are not being produced. You have to find like an old used pager, and then with that pager go to Iridium and say, I want to activate this device. And then people mostly use it, like, I don't know, like 20% of what you see is test messages, like the Yahoo test mail, and the rest is like some monitoring or whatever. There's some other like custom messaging protocols that people put over the pager messages that looks somewhat like Base64 or whatever, but you don't really know what's in there. And then even back in the original talk, we talked about these encrypted messages, which are look very much like Base64. you can see like over the years, pager messages, like the yellow line is basically what more or less clear text we can see, and the green are the encrypted one. It turns out this is actually a service that Iridium offers. It's called, at least we think that it is that, it's called Global Data Burst, and it's basically a service where you can tell Iridium, hey, I have this binary payload, send it down in that area of the world. We found some structure in the packets. It's the Base64 encoding works fine if you know that plus and slash instead of, no, it's like star and plus instead of plus and slash or whatever as characters. And then you can reassemble them and you can get payloads that are like up to 20K in length. But there's no visible internal structure, so I assume that people who use this will have it encrypted or protected in some way, but I don't know. The other message on the simplex band is the ring alert, which Schneider already said contains positions of the satellites, and not only the satellite positions, but also the position where the satellite thinks that it's spot beam. So the antennas are made of like 48 spot beams that point in different directions, and it also sends where the given spot beam that is currently sending is intended to hit the Earth, and then you can plot this as a live map and basically see the satellite move over the Earth, and you can kind of guess how good your antenna is, because you definitely will receive like stuff that is not like broadcasted to your direction, but to like slightly farther away. Some other people in the US have set up like multiple receivers and then written a nice script to merge all those maps in one, and then you can say, okay, my whole setup of, I don't know, 5 or 6 Iridium receivers together like roughly sees traffic from that area. If you plot for one receiver these locations, kind of heat map, if you take like a week or 2 weeks or a month of data and plot them as a heat map, you get the left graphics is the satellite position, and the color is the signal strength that you see, so that gives you a rough idea of like how well your antenna receives stuff from different directions. So you can see that for this setup, like in the southeast, the antenna seems to be not as good as in like for the northwest. And the other plot is the down position. So transmissions that are intended for these regions that you receive, and you can receive like for a wide area randomly, but from the signal strengths, you can see like the most stuff you will see is from a relatively close area. So you will see single packets from farther away, but a whole conversation or a whole call will have holes in it because you don't see all the stuff. It depends on like your luck. With all those position data, you can also do a little bit of like reverse engineering, like where do the spot beams send, because the satellite tells you where it hits it, and then you can like record all that and make a plot. The left is like our calculation, and the right is the published picture that Iridium sent to the FCC when they commissioned the satellites. And I would say it's kinda okay then, like it's more round in reality than the picture, but that's okay. And if you do the reverse of this, so you look at where was the intended position where it was sent, and where did I receive it, you can see where the different spot beams, like this is on, these are not all spot beams, the picture would be too chaotic. You can see that, yes, you can receive the spot beams in the areas where this is intended to go, but you also have like all these other positions where you can see it, which like corresponds to the first picture. You can see stuff randomly from somewhere else on the Earth. And I have, like, so you don't all fall asleep, an example for this. So we pick a random satellite that was satellite 28 off the coast of Italy. Like the end of the white thing is the ground position of the satellite. It's like 700 kilometers up, so by protection it's a little bit thing. And it sends a spot beam down, and the spot beam position is over there. So it's quite far away and quite to the east. And but we received it, obviously. If you plot all this constellation of the spot beam with the satellite position, you get this beam pattern. You can see the spot beam does send slightly to the southeast, but there's some side lobes to the north where you can receive it, which corresponds with where our receiver actually is, because we are in Germany and not in Italy, so we can receive this. If we look at this one example and look, okay, but what did we receive in this case? We have like a device that registered with the network. The position of that device is according to the network there. Let's zoom on that device here. So these coordinates are not super accurate. For one, the accuracy is like 4 kilometers. Like the field is only a granularity of 4 kilometers, and then the farther away from the satellite you are, like from the triangulation, it gets less precise anyway. So this is like close to Tel Aviv. We can say, okay, what did this device do when it registered? Oh, it received an SMS. It received an SMS from some email to SMS gateway from diplo.de. Does anyone know what that domain is? Well, I can Google it. It's the Auswärtige Amt. 040 is, oh, it's the Referat for Krisenreaktionszentrum. Let's see what is actually in that SMS. Well, I don't know if anyone has contacts there, tell them they should possibly use something encrypted. I don't know. Now that I have woken you up a bit, more and more boring parts, the satellite time and location is the Iridium service that is supposed to be better than GPS. We looked at it quite some time ago. The signals are very long, used the whole simplex slot. You can see in the signal there's this line, which is the preamble that all Iridium signals have. Then there's the Iridium unique word, which identifies an Iridium signal, and then it still has a piece of line. So this signal is very low, has low information density. It's used in a way that, like, it uses, I don't know, like 96 bits of data to encode 7 bits of data. So you can, like, even in very adverse signal conditions, you can correlate the signal from noise and find out what was actually sent. That's very interesting. And they say you can receive it without problems inside buildings due to that fact. I have not tried that, but supposedly it works. They also, like, we identified in there that they do send the time. It's actually the same as in the other packets where we defined the time. But we suppose that there's also a satellite position in there, hopefully like more precise than what they sent in the official packets. But we haven't so far found it. Like, on the internet, you find some pointers that mean that you have to have a contract to receive it. I'm not sure if that is encrypted or just signed, or that's unclear to me. We have not found it. If anyone has like a nice device, like the picture to receive these signals, we would really like to take a look at it. It's not super easy to get them. So far we found, okay, I have to speed up a bit. We have the new packet that is, as you can see from this graph, not actually new. It's already since 2020, and it's probably not very interesting to you. It's also a completely different form of data scrambling in there, and it has a checksum unlike any checksum that I've ever seen before. It's a linear checksum, but it's like inefficient. It uses less bits, and I have no idea. And no one yet knows, or at least from us, knows what it is. Let's go to the more interesting part of the band, the duplex band, which is like the lower part of the frequency where all the communication with the mobile devices happens. There you have three main packet types, the acquisition burst, the broadcast packet, and then all the actual data stuff. Let's quickly go over the acquisition burst, which is the first packet that your mobile phone sends up, or like Iridium phone sends up if it wants to talk to the network. It's a very, very short packet that just basically contains a unique ID and a checksum. It is intended to like figure out what your Doppler shift is and which channel you are talking to and whatever. Then there's the broadcast packet, which is in the duplex part, but it's also like information from Iridium, and that has the timestamps. The timestamp is a 32-bit integer with a granularity of 90 milliseconds because of the frame structure, as Schneider showed you. But the precision of those 90 milliseconds is about 1 to 2 microseconds, as far as we can tell, possibly more, but that's then beyond what we can measure. So 32-bit with 90 milliseconds means all this rolls over every 12 years. So this has already happened twice. Like the original timescale started in 1996, and then there was a rollover in 2007, and then there was a rollover in 2015. So the timescale starts in 2014, but the actual rollover was performed in 2015. To get to the actual like more interesting data parts, there's let's start with the least interesting of those, which is the sync packet. You can see from the long line in the signals has not much data. It's used for timing and frequency adjustments and for handover signaling. There's also another packet in there that we can decode but don't know what it's used for. And the juicy part is the packet type 1, which is the LAPD, similar to the LAPD-M protocol that GSM uses. Where all the signaling happens, and there's like sub messages. I have like call control and mobility management, whatever. Follows the same specs as GSM2G does. There's a few subtypes that are custom from Iridium that we can mostly decode, but not all of it. If you take our toolchain, I've put the command in the blue box. You can just convert it into a PCAP file and read it in Wireshark, because Wireshark can already decode this LAPD-M message, but I mean only the compatible, the Iridium parts, it cannot. But there's like a CLI decoder for the other parts. There's stuff in there like the registration. When a phone registers, the network tries to figure out where the device is. We saw that before. So the device sends up like the Doppler shift and the propagation delay that it measured, and the satellite then says, yeah, I think you're roughly there. It's again like a 4 kilometer precision. One more thing is like when you register, you send up, I want to talk to the Iridium service center. There's a 3-byte value in there. That's a magic value. There's also a test service center that can apparently be used for testing. And then there's one that belongs to the DoD. It's the DoD service center. So if you have a device that registers with the network, it will tell you, hey, I'm the one that's interesting. Okay. So you can take those positions that you get from these registrations, because like the phone sends up its information and the network sets down, I think there you are. That means you don't have to see the communication from the actual phone or whatever to the network. You just see the answer with the position, and then you can have a map that can be live updated. This one is just a screenshot, but maybe we can get to the live view later, where you can see all the dots, which means, oh, a device registered there. You don't know like which phone number or whatever, you know, just know it's a device. There's two types, like it's the GSM, it's like phones or laptops or whatever, and SBD is for short burst data. What the device also does is when it sends up its registration, it sends the previous position from the last registration, it sends that up to the network. So you can see if someone registers in roughly your area, and sends data up, you can see where it was the last time it registered. So for our setup, I mean, of course, like the general location where we are is where the most devices were, but you can see that people like came over from Washington or whatever, and you can also see a few people from Null Island. exactly, and then the rest that's also in there is the short burst data messages, which is machine-to-machine communication is how you call it these days. It's like small devices that use Iridium to send something home. We can decode that for a while. Like in our setup, we see like it's always some custom protocol. But like if you see that it's like bipole, that's, I don't know what they're doing, but it's some binary stuff. And InReach is like a small handheld mobile device for tracking. Like if you go hiking in the mountains or whatever, then people can track you. And it apparently does communicate its the payment plan you have selected over this. So you see, this one was like pay as you go for other features, but SOS messages are free all the time. Inside the SBD messages, there's one sub-protocol that is used very, very much, which is ACARS. This is communication between the between aircraft and ground, like all the ADS-B stuff and whatever. Like airplanes sometimes have Iridium receivers and senders and can communicate via that. It's a 7-bit ASCII with odd parity protocol, and the details of the protocol is not like super easy to find, and the specs cost like, I don't know, $400 for a spec, I don't know. But you can work around it. We can decode that also. I have put like two example messages for you here. The one is like top is more recent. It's like the warning, hey, you're flying somewhere where GPS might not work currently. Please be safe. And the second one is like apparently again an email to, in this case, ACARS gateway that informs the likely military machine of to have some fun. Last but not least, we have some other like good old data, like IP data. We can also see that there's no automatic reassembly for the IP stuff. The main problem here is that this is like several levels of reassembly that you have to do on top of each other, and that means like if one single packet is missing, it's really difficult. So the reassembly, if you do it by hand, it works out. If you do automatically, it's really difficult. But you can see like the DoD obviously uses like X509 certificates here. Other people do not use encryption. They go to their email server and, well, luckily had no new email, so I don't see anything. But yeah. Maybe, I don't know, like it's two problems. Like, why is he fetching stuff via plain text? And why is this hoster like even having plain text pop? I don't know. Inside the same part of the Iridium protocol, you also have Rudix, which is basically glorified telnet over Iridium. So it's also binary data. I have two examples here for you. The one is like some apparently some custom protocol again. The other one is like some French university that has whatever service, like a Kermit server, no idea. That IP is valid, you can reverse it, it has that host name, but they firewalled it off from the internet, so don't worry. And the very last part that we have is the voice data, and I will refer back to Schneider for that.
Yep, so Iridium obviously is also a satellite phone service, right? And last time we presented, we had these voice frames, and we could decode them, and then we also had something called mystery data, where we had like three channels active at the same time, and we didn't know what to do with them. By now, we call them VOD, and it's the same codec spread over three different channels just to get some more redundancy inside, apparently. And if you search the internet, there's actually a few YouTubers which are making videos about the Iridium toolchain that we're publishing, and they're still using this tool that we showed in our last talk, where you like click inside a box and then a player starts in the background, and some people say, okay, just if there's a lot of dots, click right top left and bottom right, and then everything plays at once. But please don't do that. We by now have scripts which actually like figure out where does a call start, where does it end, and puts them together. It even handles like handovers. Oh, great. Between different satellites. So if a phone talks to a satellite and the satellite sets down behind the horizon and a new one comes up, the phone has to switch over to a different satellite. And most of these signaling stuff we have not looked at so far yet. They are called in the link control word, but sometimes, and I'm sorry, but somehow the import didn't work quite well. There's a handoff response, and it gives the device a new channel, new time slot, and there it then moves over, and we now have software which actually follows this, and you can have a little bit a longer listen to a call depending on how close you are to the self, to the mobile device that has been talking. Now, if you just set up an Iridium antenna right now and start the voice cluster script, you will get some voice out of it. It will probably be an automated voice which is telling you that you're not allowed to dial an emergency service something, or might be some speech corpus from Harvard or something like that. But for some time in the recent years,
because a rope is always in tension. You can't push a rope. If you pull on this side of the rope, that force transfers all the way through the pulley. So we basically can redirect the force. That is the primary function of a pulley, redirecting force.
Anyone recognize that? One. You're not a lot on YouTube. That was Smarter Every Day, a very famous YouTuber from the US. And for some reason, Iridium decided to broadcast that down all day long.
We're not sure if it was Iridium or some other person just testing whether his voice credits are still valid. I don't know.
In any case, that was very funny because we're like, why are we listening to this right now? Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're not listening to anything. Well, that was the last interesting example, I guess. Thank you so much. All the stuff we've been talking about is essentially condensed into these two projects, GR Iridium, which demodulates stuff and outputs text files with zeros and ones, and the Iridium toolkit, which then makes some potentially nice graphs out of it. And if we're very lucky, then we might have a view of the sky behind us while we do Q&A.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Zach and Schneider. Was a pleasure. Really interesting to hear that insights. A new Herald spawned.
Hi.
We're ready for your questions. If you have questions for Zach or Schneider, please line up on the microphones. There are a lot of microphones in the room. We already have questions from the interwebs. I see there people. We start, first of all, with the internet. So please.
Yeah. The internet wants to know if you informed the Auswärtiges Amt about the plaintext communication?
No, we have informed them right now. to be honest, I suspect they should already know that this is not like encrypted. But I don't know. Like, if you want to call them, be my guest.
We have a question at microphone 4. Go ahead, please.
Hi, thanks for the talk. So I have a question. You use GNU Radio for all the analog stuff, but then GNU Radio is notoriously bad with paketization. So are you using something else for that, or you implemented everything from scratch, or...?
You're absolutely right, right? GNU Radio is really good if you have streaming data and a continuous stream of stuff it can lock onto. We spent a lot of time to like make it aware of these packets and cut the spectrum up and everything. And in the end, it outputs at the moment like single lines of text with zeros and ones. And all the other stuff which is related to, okay, let's do checksums, let's put packets together and stuff like that, we do later on in a Python tool.
And you implemented it yourself?
Sorry?
The Python tool, you implemented it yourself.
Yeah, yes. So GR Iridium is the thing which outputs zeros and ones, and the Iridium toolkit is the thing which then makes sense out of the data.
But I mean, both parts, like both the packetization and the channelizing and whatever we do in GR Iridium is mostly written by Schneider, using GNU Radio and C++ code, and the rest, like once it's demodulated, then it's like handed off to Python tools.
And Video Angel, can we have the audio, the video output once more?
Oh no, we have to.
So these are Iridium devices active right now, as they attach themselves to the network. And that's like just what we can see like from here. It's more of a fun thing, I guess. You can't really, say, okay, this is a specific device, but you can see where's some activity. There might be places on Earth where this is a not so great thing to have your dot appear on.
One thing that I forgot during the talk is that these positions are also like the same 4 kilometer granularity as the other positions that Iridium sends, but for whatever reason, the rounding is different. Like for the normal data, it's just truncated. For this, it's rounded like 2 kilometers in either direction. So I have no idea why. Seems unnecessary, but we figured it out.
I think it's called security by obscurity. Another question from the internet.
Yeah, they wanted to know if the PPS output shouldn't be more in the nanosecond range. What does the SDR do with such offset? What we can only say what we can measure. Right, and you have to see that a single symbol on Iridium is, I think, 4 microseconds long. And getting, I think it's 40 microseconds long. And even to get down to 1 or 2 microseconds, you already have to correlate over multiple symbols. So at the moment, we are correlating over 12 symbols. That's the unique word that every packet has. If we want to get higher accuracy and go, let's say, below 1 microsecond, we have to start to correlate to over more symbols of the packet. That's also why these Iridium time and location packets are longer, so you can correlate over more symbols and get more precision. There are ways to improve this also, but we haven't done this yet because at the moment our inaccuracies are less about the correlation and more about everything else, signal strength and other, let's say, systematic influences. Probably you can get, I can only assume that the signal that Iridium sends down is more accurate than these 1 or 2 microseconds, but I cannot prove it.
Thank you. Okay. We have another question at microphone number 6, please.
Hi, I'd like to know more about any kind of authentication on the uplink. So does Iridium tend to use like kind of SIM aligned technologies for establishing a session like up to the satellites?
So we are talking about like the old Iridium protocol, and that uses SIMs in the phones, but those SIMs are only used to authenticate to the network, basically for billing.
Right, yeah.
Like all the data, the classic Iridium data is unencrypted. We assume that the Iridium Next packets are encrypted, better authenticated, but we don't know. But I mean, the original Iridium system is from the 90s. I mean, back then, encryption was not something on everyone's mind, and like actually the CPUs were not really fast.
You have to consider that when Iridium was built, they were more worried about fraud. So the only thing, right, so the device authenticates itself to the network with GSM standard stuff, so they have this random number which goes down and the SRES which goes up. I think that's the way it goes. But let's say the network does not authenticate itself at all to the mobile devices.
Interesting.
Just saying.
Is this another question from microphone number 6?
Yes.
It is. Please.
Thank you very much for this talk, first of all. At our company, we're using this short burst data for our FTS of our drone, like the flight termination system. Might this be a bad idea?
Well, I mean, everyone can listen, for sure. We're not aware of anyone sending so far, but...
So... The short burst data devices do not have a SIM. Their authentication is based on their EMI, so the number of the equipment number of this thing. You can, if you know that, you can clone that device and send stuff to the network. If that is a problem for your use case, then you should maybe add a layer of security to it.
There is another question on microphone number 2, please.
Yeah, regarding this map, you mentioned earlier that there's like the information of what devices are particularly interesting because they're trying to connect to the DoD. Do you have that information on that level?
I could. The thing is, like, obviously, you don't see very many of, like, if you. I don't actually have for this map. I have never tried it to look at, but it's like in the sub 1% range of registrations that actually use that. I mean, it's part of the uplink. So this map is the downlink position, like it's what the satellite sent down. You would have to look at the uplink, like devices that are close to you, only a couple of kilometers or maybe tens of kilometers, where you have to receive the uplink. Then there you can see it. But it's an interesting idea. I could look up. I have no idea how many we have seen over the years.
Okay. So, but it means you need to be close to those devices to identify them as such.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Another question from the internet? Okay, then I have a question. It looks like an interesting part of your life and takes roughly a little bit of time. Would you tell us how many money you spent already on your equipment? Rough estimation.
Well, the interesting part is that I think I have hundreds of thousands of euros of Iridium equipment at home, and some of that was donated to us, anonymously. But I think we have like 5 Iridium satellite phones, which are not doing anything. I'm not sure how much they're worth. way too much. I mean, you cannot weigh up this stuff in money. I mean, the amount of time and nerves and sleepless, not sleepless nights, but long nights which go into this stuff is way more than any kind of monetary.
I mean, the problem is more that we started to look at this and then we got involved with SDRs and like then you buy a new SDR and you different, like there's add-on costs that are not directly related to Iridium but somehow stem from the whole thing.
I saw your contact details. Would you have time later on for the missed demo?
The missed demo.
Yeah, the demo you said regarding the demo.
The GPS demo.
I think this is not going to happen anymore.
Okay. So no demo.
You know, people send you stuff from the NAR Research Corporation. Just ends up. It's cool.
I mean, if you're interested in like the GPS location stuff or whatever, you can stop by the assembly and we can try it there later on.
So you see, we're here at Chaos Congress and things tend to spawn here pretty quickly, I assume. So, we're out of our time. It was really, really a pleasure. I did like the discussion, really appreciate that. Thank you, Second Schneider, for being here and giving us insight on Iridium.